It's not about the quantity, sometimes it's the quality of the signal, right? So very often people look at the, oh, you know, if the client that did this and that, it just points this. But sometimes there is particular signal which is very valuable, you know, a certain actions when you have to like really make a statement, you know, you have to be able to pick just this one signal because it's really predictive of what a person will do, despite very often five other signals which point to the other side.
Hey guys, welcome to the Brain and Brand Show. I'm your behavioral psychology host, Timothy Maurice. And my mission is to offer you insights and tools to help you get the most out of your brain. Today we're going to explore why humans have such advanced and powerful brains, but still make such stupid decisions, and how to be less of an idiot and generally more intelligent across your entire life. I'm pleased to welcome Mr. Cesare Pietrasic, the author of Homo Idioticus, the study of big brain, why humans, and why we make such stupid decisions. Cesare, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, pleasure to be here. Really, really grateful for invitation. Thank you.
Yeah, you are completely fascinating to me. You have such extraordinary interest, and you have a really fascinating journey. But I want to know, you are the co-owner of the number one behavioral AI company globally. What on earth do you guys do? How do you use AI to understand behavior?
So behavioral AI is a different discipline from the large language models. It's think of like large language models, think of it as a like big library which predicts the next token, the next text. And behavioral AI is think about as a very complicated diagram which looks at relationships between various things and then actions that you take, and then based on the past performance, predicts your next behavior, your next action.
Got it. Like at a bank, you guys can install software at a bank, kind of understanding the decision making of consumers, and then the bank can respond that type of thing,
That's
right?
exactly right. For example, we help banks predict which customers really don't like them or they have underperformed with which customers, and then they can approach those customers and give them some extra goodies.
Got it. So can you install this app on a husband or wife's phone so they can know if they plan on leaving?
No, we haven't done it, but that's a great idea. Well, I guess the more data we have, the more we'll be able to predict.
Yeah, I can imagine a thousand uses of this. So before we get into your extraordinary book, which I really thoroughly enjoy, I need to go inside of your mind. We have a fun feature. I'm going to share with you either-or questions, and it's going to give our listeners a little bit of insight into who you are in a fun, chill way. Can I do that? Can I go inside your mind?
Of course, go ahead.
Right, seven questions. You cannot cheat. You've got to answer one or the other. Here we go. Number one, painting or sculpting?
Sculpting.
Number two, coffee or tea?
Coffee.
It's going to get increasingly more challenging. Brace
That wasn't
yourself.
very difficult so far.
Number three, reading or writing?
Ooh. Ooh. Reading.
So, shaven or a beard?
Beard.
If
100%.
you said shaven and with a beard, I was just gonna be like this guy. Homo idiotic. India or China?
China.
Apple or Samsung?
Apple.
And finally, you're doing really good, by the way. Left brain or right brain?
Right brain.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let me just say that was the easiest. You didn't really think much. I was
Nope.
super surprised. Have you spent much time in India or China?
Yes, actually, yeah, both of those countries.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So yeah, I'm just startled by how China has transformed itself in the last 30 years. I was there in
Yeah.
2002, and today China is completely different.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, the thinking is, I did some work with the Bank of China, The thinking is that if you go there every 5 years and you find the same thing, then something is wrong, right? It's incredible. Well, thank you for allowing us to go inside your mind. Your mind. My first question to you is, are you stupid?
Yes, like most of us, sadly. I wrote this book fully with with the feeling that it's like kind of almost like a self-help book for me, including myself, and for most of my readers. But basically, first we need to acknowledge that we are irrational and illogical, and then once you're illogical, once you acknowledge that you're illogical, you can do something about this. And one third of the book is about what to do about it.
You know, the fascinating thing to me is that what often is framed as illogical can be packaged as perspective. It can be packaged as inquiry. It can be practice. It can be framed as a way of exploration and the consequences of exploration. How do you really know a decision was stupid?
Oh, that's almost a philosophical question, because normally the answer to it is driven by the biological or Darwinian standards, which is, does it advance your cause as individual, right? This is one way. Does it make your situation better long term? The other way of looking at it, does it make your species more favorable or more comfortable? Right? And sometimes the answer to it is completely different. Think about, for example, talking about the topic of being illogical, there is the excavations of the Gettysburg Battle, of the biggest battle of the American Civil War, showed that 15%, 50%, 50 of muskets were loaded twice, which means that they were not firing, which means that 50% of the people were trying to fake that they were shooting at other people. So
Oh,
how
wow.
illogical, but how beautiful at the same time, isn't it? Like
Yeah.
this illogical biological reluctance to kill others. And it's strange, because in the battle, actually, if you don't kill them, they will kill you.
Yeah, you know. Preparing for this interview, I was thinking a lot about things that were once thought as stupid, but now seem like high forms of intelligence. And I don't want to get too far into the philosophy, but you know, the Eiffel Tower was once seen as the dumbest erection, architecture in the world. It was, you know, f the French hated it. And now people travel there just to take a photo in front of it. And so, you know, for me, I do want to be clear to anyone listening that, you know, perspective is important. As we go through this conversation in your pursuit of intelligence, the application of insights in a way to help you navigate the world, you know, I want people to hold stupidity lightly. You know, I want people to kind of just sort of sit with it and you know, allow us to get through this conversation, you know? As you know, I think about some of the decisions that I've made that there was really no way to have any form of intelligence. You know, I used to be in a relationship with one of Nelson Mandela's granddaughters. You know, she and I went through, you know, a few years of a relationship where I had no real idea who she was, what family she came from. And on many levels, culturally, I made a lot of stupid decisions. And it has turned out that those are some of the best decisions because it opened up so many pathways to me, for me. But at the time, it was painful. And so, like I said, I don't want to go too far down this. At what stage should you allow yourself a little bit of grace for your stupid decisions?
I think that I would allow it for the situations which involve exploration, exactly as you
Okay.
mentioned, is
Okay.
that when you do something, in pursuit of the new things, in maybe going a little bit, being too too brave in certain explorations,
Okay.
maybe being a little bit, would say, too audacious in life. Sometimes it just happens. Sometimes people are stupidly brave, but you know what? This typically brings good things.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. All right. Cool. So let's dive in a little bit. I've been thinking about the various Qs that every other day there's a new Q. We had IQ, EQ, CQ, cultural intelligence, SQ, spiritual intelligence. I really believe there's like a BQ, beauty intelligence. And maybe social media, SMQ, social media intelligence. Out of all these intelligences, which one do you think is, if you had to rank them, IQ, EQ, and does GQ, general intelligence, which of these intelligence, which of the Qs do you think is most important to avoid stupidity, to avoid being an idiot?
Yeah. Look, a lot of scientists would tell you now that it's artificial intelligence. It's AI, right?
AI.
Because it makes a very cold, rational decisions, right? It's just based on data. The question is only whether the data is correct. Remember, there is this term garbage in, garbage out. So if you don't have the right data, you will not make the right conclusions. But AI is very cold about this, right? And if you set the goal function, right? It should make logical decisions. But for us as humans who do not have access to artificial intelligence in our brains, right? It's an external addition. I would say that it's emotional intelligence, right? Because emotional intelligence involves and blends many other of those, cultural and general intelligence and IQ, because you have to not only act rationally and logically, but you have to read the room. You have to read the reactions of other people. So it's kind of blending a lot of things. So if I were to pick one, I would pick that.
What's your strongest out of the Qs?
I would say that EQ is my strength. I empathize with people. I sometimes when I'm in situations, did I just empathize too much? I remember as a child when my parents would take me to the circus, I was like really scared looking at those acrobats because I was like really worrying for them. I was like, no, like something bad will happen. I don't want to watch that, right? And in many other situations, I really can feel when someone is disappointed in a meeting, or I can see it in their eyes that they are bored, or they really don't like the person speaking. I just see it very, very easily in their eyes.
Let me just say thank you for pursuing this creative and interesting framing of this conversation. The behavioral sciences are kind of littered with people who are taking themselves far too seriously. And I really feel that. Even in the early stages of this conversation, that you have kind of a lightness with your rigor. People who are rigorous and deep and very tackle complex things, but do so with a lightness. And I found that in your work that, you enjoy this, aren't you?
Yes, it's a work of love. It's a work of passion. And, I'm not expecting this to be my job. It's just I love studying humans and I hope it
Yeah.
will help us.
In your AI work, are you guys coming across anything that's surprising relative to how to gain for loyal customers or any patterns that are have struck out recently on how to just connect with people better from a branding or a leadership perspective?
Yes, there is number of, well, first of all, the biggest surprise is that it is often not about it's not about the quantity. Sometimes it's the quality of the signal, right? So very often people look at if the client that did this and that, it just points this. But sometimes there is particular signal which is very valuable, a certain actions. When you have to like really make a statement, this, you have to be able to pick just this one signal because it's really predictive of what a person will do, despite very often five other signals which point to the other side. But
I see.
more generally, I would say that what I was surprised by is how predictable we are. It is just incredible. I'm almost thinking that we are, to really great extent, the product of a lot of our environment. And I'm not like this, viewing the world in a deterministic way where, whatever you were born and the Skinnerian type of thing and what your incentives were, et cetera. No, I don't believe in this. But there is, it's probably like 80-20 or 70-30, something like that. Meaning that
Wow.
surprisingly high percentage of your actions can be explained with how you spent your childhood, what you where you went to school, how did your parents talk to you, whether they hugged you much or didn't, et cetera, et cetera.
You do a lot of charity work. You give back through the Butterfly Effect Foundation, which I love, the work you're doing to influence the world. Is that what really drives you? Is this a genuine love for people and seeing people thrive by making better decisions?
For me, it's, I think that's, oh, very, very big questions you're asking, Tim. For me, I don't have kids, right? Personally. So for me, the meaningful life means that I leave something which is immortal, right? And for me, something that is immortal is the memory of me doing something that is worth remembering, which
Yeah.
probably is helping the children, which otherwise would be neglected, that, changing the life of a student who would never go to university if it wasn't for our intervention money, et cetera, right? I think that ultimately all of us are actually seeking that. And a lot of
Yeah.
people are seeking this through children, which is a natural biological extension of you and makes you kind of immortal. But a lot of people think about the architects, the politicians, the famous painters, et cetera. Everybody wants to leave something behind. It's almost like natural urge that.
Yeah. And our ability to be able to do it globally now. I mean, you've got a global history, moving from London to San Francisco and having a heritage that is a bloodline that's, for, from other parts of Europe. It's incredible our ability to make an impact on the world using smart models. Let's dive a little bit further into your book. You're about to go on tour, and what are you looking forward to? I mean, the world, this is a global, I mean, you guys have a bit of a global strategy, right? With the book, like, where do you see the book really landing? Which parts of the world are you hoping to promote it in?
Look, the book is very heavily skewed towards the US, where I lived for the last several years. And but there is also great admixture of UK and Poland, the two other countries where I spent all my life. But it's really targeting US and with given plethora of examples, etc. And it's also, one of the biggest markets in the world, right? So my goal for that is to create a movement, to create the, think about as the in the Star Wars, the rebels, like fighting back the empire. So I want to fight back stupidity. That's basically what I want to create, a movement that acknowledges that we kind of are stupid, but you know what? We are all in it together and we need to fight tooth and nail, on the beaches and in the hills. And, like Churchill said, fight it, we shall never surrender, right? So that is the movement I want to start. I want to start with understanding why and then explaining people the mechanisms and giving them the tools of fighting it. Because future without or with less stupidity is better than the future with a lot of stupidity that we have today.
I'm amazed at how easy it is. And I'm going to be honest with you. The more I study the brain, this, the more afraid I often become. And I don't live with fear as a driver, but I'm often amazed at how easy it is to use emotion, narrative, and crowd effects to drive people to do destructive and dangerous things. If you think about how easy it is to get swept up into a mob, you're at a soccer match, and then all of a sudden, the people in your area start attacking people. And you look back on it and go, why? Why do you think we're so susceptible to illogical, stupid decisions? What is it about human nature?
It's so strong. It's mesmerizing, but kind of sad. It is basically the product of the, it's called groupthink in the theory, which is basically a desire to have belonging. And it's when you go really, like really, really down, what it is to have no perception of being different from the rest of your group, because being different to your group in the old days when our brains were formed meant death. Think about this. Like, we are in the civilized world for only a couple of hundred years. It's like, if you even include when we are since we settled, it's less than 2% of our time on Earth, right? So for 98% of time when our brain was formed, basically we had to conform with society, or otherwise being left outside of society was certain death from weather, animals, lack of food, whatever, right? So we have this inborn feeling that we need to be like the rest of the group. And if you have a few leaders of the group which do something crazy, you kind of feel obliged to follow, and you don't feel, and actually there is biological, confirmed biological reactions, which is essentially like a dopamine hit when you feel that the group likes what you do. It's biology. It's like chemistry. It's really hardwired.
And I think that's why this book is so essential, is that if you can recognize that there are these intuition kind of pumps that are pushing you towards groupthink and so forth, and use some of these tools. So let's dig into a couple of these tools you highlighted in the book as people go online and start ordering the book. Let's give them a little bit of a teaser into a couple of the tools so that we can be a little bit more intelligent and help advance our lives.
So, one of the most important thing is to be aware of the manipulation techniques and some of the patterns that you see that make us stupid, right? So think of it as a kind of critical thinking course. It can be taught at a school, or you can teach it yourself, right? And I explain a lot of those mechanisms. And those things are such things such as picking a minority to like fight, pick some small guys and bully them, right? This is a typical manipulation technique, right? To create strength and create belonging and whatever. Another typical pattern is cult of personality. When you see that your leader is starting to make those great poses, and you need to bow and whatever, like it's really a red signal. Like it never went well. Tons of other patterns are differentiating facts from opinions, and being able to get the right data, right? So if you are surrounded by wrong data, you will make wrong decisions. Therefore, it's very, very important to go outside of your comfort zone and read the data from other sources. For example, I try to read really from different sources, like completely opposite spectrum of political divide, etc., just to have perspectives of everyone, right? And then there's tons of other frameworks that can help you with this. The concept of Pareto rule, the concept of long-term versus short-term effect, that something can be very good for you short-term, but the same decision, the same thing will bite you in the end, etc., right? So there's ton of those frameworks and concepts that are just helpful, and when you spot it, you just know it. You just, that's the, yeah, they're gonna give us this, and you know what? But in 5 years, our economy will go down because of that.
One of my favorite stories of a parent who taught his teenage daughters to recognize stupid boys. Basically, this was a Harvard professor who had preteens, and he said, I want to show you how little interest this guy really has in you. So they set up some experiments where three of their female friends would do the exact same thing to a guy who said they liked them to expose them. And he explained to them, when you're entering your fertility window, guys are responding to a hormonal pattern, not you. And he showed how that same hormonal pattern would trigger the exact same behavior in the guy. They couldn't believe it. And I thought that was so powerful. And it's exactly your point, is that if you show people there are models, and then they can measure what they're seeing in the world on this model, against this model, boom, it's like an explosive light happens. But I do want to know, do you have any hacks or tricks for people who seem to keep making the same stupid decision by choosing the same horrible life partners? Is there a way to go inside of yourself to hack whatever it is that's causing you to reverberate this energy into the world to attract these same horrible people?
I would say that you need to first really work on yourself, love yourself, and get your
Sorry,
vibe.
wait. I can't be in a podcast conversation with a man who wrote a book about it and then say, oh, just love yourself. Come on, I need a
No,
hack.
no, no. Look, there is serious science behind the fact that if you were exposed to a lot of role models that were not perfect, you would try to kind of replicate this, right? And then if you feel the self value higher, you will not be with someone who doesn't appreciate you, right? It's sadly science. That's
I
but
get it.
I'm not a relationship expert. I have to say I've made my own mistakes. I'm with a phenomenal partner now, but I made serious mistakes in the past, so I'm not already on this topic.
Listen, we have to get you down to South Africa. I'm recording from South Africa at the moment. And I can tell you that I know the US is a priority. You know, there are many countries around the world that are priorities, but I would love to kind of co-host some seminars and have some chats with you with my client base. I really think the concept will land really, really well. And so if
I
you're
would
open
love
to
it.
that, yeah, let's,
I would
you
love
know what?
it.
I have a couple of brands I'd like to pitch some ideas to. So if you're open to
Phenomenal.
it, let's do it.
I've been to Africa only for 12 hours many years ago for business.
Oh,
So
wow.
I
Oh,
have,
wow. Yeah, I mean, as you know, Africa is a big place. I do think the Western bloc, Eastern, Southern, I really think there's a big market for you here. And so I'm really wishing you the best. Give me one final tip. You know, I will say that, like, much like this professor who told his children that our hormones and our emotions and our attraction to fulfilling these kind of hidden desires in ourselves, for me personally, has led to some of my dumbest, stupidest, idiotic decisions, you know, or things that were I was being driven by. Let me give you one example. So as a kid, my parents weren't able to afford the Jordans. I grew up in the East Coast in the same state that Michael Jordan went to college, and my parents weren't able to afford Jordan. So I as I got older, I became obsessed with expensive sneakers. And so I never made the correlation between that void and my desire to spend so much money on shoes to much later. How could people tap into what's really the hidden drivers so that they can make better decisions? Any thoughts on that?
How they can tap into the hidden drivers.
Yeah, you know, because, you know, it's that unknown dimension that's pushing us towards making stupid decisions and spending too much and all of these things. And I really, you know, I think books like yours, what they do is inspire you to seek patterns inside of yourself, inspire you to raise consciousness and awareness and give you tools and so forth. And that's why I know, I mean, one of the things I love about this podcast is people call me and tell me, I got the book of the author. I bought Cesare's book. I love that. And if there is a particular chapter you would recommend reading to help us with that particular, is there a chapter you would recommend us reading?
There is no chapter that on this specific topic. So I would prefer to think about this and maybe address it in this seminar.
Hey, yeah, or maybe we do part two of this.
Exactly. I would love
Yeah, how about that?
that.
Yeah, let's do a part two of this, and we do. Yeah, I'm really wishing you the best on your launch and your speaking tour. I mean, one of the best things about writing books, having been on this pathway a number of times myself, is the people you meet along the way who tell you stories, right? You must be really looking forward to that.
Thank you so much. I'm very, very excited, and thank you for the opportunity of sharing the story.
Yeah, I look forward to part two, and all the best and much, much appreciated for making time.
Thank you.